You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, we'll preview President Trump's first official State of the Union address. Now, Wisconsin's Western District led the nation in farm bankruptcies last year, according to a new federal report. The district cuts a jagged line across more than half of the state, covering 42 counties. And the bankruptcies come at a time when the economy seems to have recovered from the Great Recession. Wisconsin's current unemployment rate is lower than the national average. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How is your farm doing? Are you a farmer who is struggling with debt, or do you maybe know someone who is? What's causing issues for you or those in your community? Email us at ideas@wpr.org or call us now at 800-642-1234. Joining us now is Paul Mitchell. He's a professor of agricultural and applied economics and the director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute, both at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. You're welcome.
So Wisconsin's Western District had 28 Chapter 12 bankruptcies last year. That's the category for family farmers or fishermen. How does that number look in context with national numbers?
As a district, the court districts are, I think there's 94 of them, and it's the highest. Mm-hmm. You add it up across the state, so the whole state of Wisconsin compared to the other states, and we had 41, so that's second highest. Only Georgia was ahead of us, and so it's still very high on a national scale.
And comparing it to previous years in Wisconsin, what does that look like?
There's been a big mm-hmm. uptick this year.
And it does seem, like we said, that the economy has recovered in large part since the recession, but this would seem to indicate that maybe farmers have missed out on some of the benefits from that recovery.
Yeah, the agricultural, the farm sector is on a different cycle than the whole economy at some times. And this time is roughly the third year in a row of falling farm incomes at a national scale and in Wisconsin. And it seems to have stabilized at the aggregate statistics, but it's much lower than it has been. And so agriculture, particularly corn, soybeans, dairy, have had another bad year after another bad year after another mm-hmm. bad year. And so a lot of that capital, it's just that stress from all that capital being gone is really starting to show.
So what explains that difference between kind of general recovery and how the agricultural sector recovers? And is that common? Has that happened with other ebbs and flows of the overall economy?
Yeah, that's a very common result. I mean, just look back at your history. The Roaring Twenties was also the time when agriculture had a very bad time. That's, over almost 100 years ago. And ag sector does not always move with the rest of the economy. It's not it's not our full driving force of our U.S. economy. There's many other sectors. And so it's, again, another situation here where crop prices, milk prices are low relative to costs, and farmers are under a lot of financial stress.
You mentioned that a couple of times now, so let's dig into that a little, that low commodity prices for corn, soybeans, milk, that's affecting farmers. What are the driving forces that dictate whether those prices are high, low, stable, or not?
This is basic economics in the sense of supply and demand. We just have a lot of supply relative to the demand. And more than anything, it's export markets. For all those commodities, exports are a sizable portion. And so as soon as export markets slow down or just overall demand slows down, you've got an excess. And then the prices come down. I always say never underestimate the capacity of agriculture to oversupply the market. We seem to be able to do that all the time.
And is that at least in part because technology is getting better and better and more efficient, that we're probably going to be producing more than we need on maybe less land?
It's partly the technology. It's just acreages. Part of it really is there's always a cyclical nature is that you make decisions of what to plant and you have to wait several months. So it's not like a just-in-time kind of decision where you can look at the price, make a decision. Mm-hmm. You have to, there's a big long lag cycle built in. The average cow or the beef we eat is 2 or 3 years old. Hogs are 6 months old. Crops take 6 months. There's that built-in lag factor that kind of separates the time you make decisions from when you finally find out some of these things like the prices.
So maybe in other sectors of the economy, producers are or manufacturers are able to pivot a little more quickly when they see different trends coming.
It helps, yes. That's part of it. It's just we have those natural cycles where agriculture and other industries, they do have some of that still. But yes, we just face more of that in agriculture.
We are talking right now with Paul Mitchell. He's professor of agricultural and applied economics and director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute, both at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And those farms that are going into bankruptcy, those farmers that are having to declare bankruptcy, what do we know about, for instance, the size of those farms, or if they tend to be producing one particular product more than others?
We've looked at the data, and I've talked to the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Farm Center, the law firm that's been handling a lot of these, and there's really no pattern. It's some of them are dairy farms, some are crop farms only. Some cranberries having a very rough time. We're a major cranberry state. We produce about half the world's cranberries. Cranberries has been a long-term slump. Some are small, some are large. It's not really any one style of farm. It's all of agriculture is under a lot of stress for, crops on that side and dairy. And so it hits all of our farmers in the state in some way, shape, or form.
And what about the value of farm? A USDA report said that farm values actually increased by 9.5% in Wisconsin last year. How does that play into this equation?
Yeah, that's a good point. Last year, the land values increased 9.5%. And so somebody out there thinks, the long-term investment is good. And it's primarily dairy. The long-term prospects are positive, and there's money to be made. And these aggregate statistics on the average cost of production, the average farm price, there are individuals who are different than those averages. And so some operations are definitely able to have a low enough cost to make a good living, to make a good return on investment at these current prices. And so those are the individuals or companies or organizations, trusts that are investing in the land and increasing the prices.
So for an individual homeowner just living, in a town or a city, when your property value goes up, so do your taxes. Is that also an element with farmland? How does that work?
That's my understanding. The responsiveness to the value isn't always the same, and the mill rates or the percentages are different. But yes, as you have higher taxes to pay the higher because of the higher land values.
We're talking about bankruptcies on farms in Wisconsin, and that the Western region has led the nation in the last year in those farm bankruptcies. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And let's go to Joan calling from Watertown. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm a small-time vegetable grower in Watertown. I grow organically. And I've been reading a lot about the meat producers in this country that are organic, producing organically, and the rising demand for organic meats, and how those meat producers have to get their feed, their grain, from other countries because there's not enough organic grain being grown here to supply them. And I think this is something that these growers could turn to.
That's a really interesting point, Joan. And Paul, that's an interesting differentiation that we hadn't mentioned, is the difference between organic and conventional agriculture. What do we know about differences there?
Yeah, she's exactly right. We actually have to import a lot of our organic grain, particularly corn and soybean, for both human and animal consumption for livestock. And it's actually very important here in Wisconsin and with our dairy industry, those cows to maintain Organic Valley or pick your other favorite organic supplier of milk, those cows have to be fed organic feed. But surprisingly, we have to import it. And I've heard this before, and we're trying to understand why can't we grow organic corn and soybeans? We're the world's largest producer of both those crops, yet we're not able to produce enough to feed our livestock, or the organic livestock. And I think part of it is just farmers are reluctant to change. It's a 3-year transition period. Some people have a harder time making the transition, and the cost is different. And to be honest, some of the growers declaring bankruptcy, my understanding, some of them actually are organic dairies. And so they have been facing tight margins as well. Organic Valley has reduced the prices, is my understanding, that they guarantee for their producers. And so even they are feeling the pinch. It's not just it's definitely better than some of the conventional growers, but it's not like they're immune to this oversupply issue.
Paul Mitchell is a professor of agricultural and applied economics and the director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We're taking a look at farm bankruptcies, particularly in the western region of Wisconsin. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think can be done to prevent future farm bankruptcies? Do you know a farmer who has filed for bankruptcy or is struggling with debt? If you're in danger of having to file for bankruptcy, what would help you avoid that? Email us at ideas@wpr.org or give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. We're continuing our discussion about farm bankruptcies with Paul Mitchell, professor of agricultural and applied economics and director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Western Wisconsin led the nation in Chapter 12 bankruptcies last year. And Paul, what do we know about what happens when these family farmers file for bankruptcy? Are they leaving the industry, or is this a way to catch up with debt and try to continue in the sector?
I'm no legal expert by any means, but it's my understanding that Chapter 12 is specially meant for agricultural operations farms. And my understanding is it helps them maintain the land ownership potentially. But again, I'm no legal expert. I just do know if they get to a certain size, larger the debt overall, I think it's somewhere over $4 million. By law, they have to file under Chapter 11 than the largest operations do.
And that's the bankruptcy that most people...
Yeah, that's a consumer or a homeowner or just anybody, a normal citizen that would have to file under that.
I wonder, especially in thinking about what you said earlier, Paul, that there's that long lag time in the agricultural sector and agricultural producers being able to respond to trends because, you know, you don't have a full grown cow or a fully grown field of corn or soybeans instantaneously. I wonder, do some farmers take on debt thinking that prices are going a certain way, and then they have too much debt for what the market ends up being when they're eventually able to sell in it.
That's exactly what happens, is a lot of these farms take a mix of their own money and they get some sort of an operating loan to buy the inputs to put a crop in. There's fertilizers, there's fuel to run the machinery, maybe you need new equipment, you have to buy different chemicals, different treatments for your the seed, all that stuff, hiring people to help you, and usually people get operating loans. A lot of the seed and stuff is locked in, and by this time of year, most farms have already bought that. The farms that are financially stressed didn't make enough money last fall when they sold their crop, or are in the process of selling their crop now to get another operating loan, and they don't have enough equity, enough capital of their own money to do that. And so now they're scrambling, trying to find a way to find enough money to put a crop in. Because if you can't put a crop in, how do you justify having the land? Do you rent it out then? Well, now it's getting late for someone to rent it. And you see, it's kind of it snowballs.
Let's go to the phones at 800-642-1234. And Owen in Wyoega is up. Hi, Owen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So as far as the dairy sector goes, I'm employed on a dairy farm. I'm a young farmer that would like to start my own farm, but due to the cost of capital investment, I've been all but talked out of it by anybody I talk to from the USDA or FSA or even professors at the Fox Valley Technical College where I'm enrolled. But the problem I see is, this is simple economics, we're overproducing milk to the point where the demand is lesser than the production. And this continues to happen for a lot of different reasons. But the biggest factor I see is, when I wrote the USDA, they told me that if you milk 2,000 cows or more, your economies of scale are better and your profit margins are better. That's understandable, but we get more and more people that are milking 2,000 cows that want to milk 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, and then our government is continuing to work with them, giving them crop loss insurance and benefits that they receive from those types of programs, while their neighbor gets choked out, basically. The small, independent family farmer can't continue to make money selling milk from 90 to 100 cows that he can take care of by himself without a bunch of outside labor.
Thanks for that call, Owen, and I want to give Paul a chance to respond. So it sounds like Owen's saying that the focus is on more and more, but that just makes the overproduction worse and worse.
Yeah, I mean, this is the standard farm problem we've been facing for decades, and our he's right in the sense our policies have been oriented towards keeping the profit or prices low or generating a lot of supply. And that's what it, I think the best name for this is called Cochrane's treadmill. Willard Cochrane is a professor at University of Minnesota who coined that term back in the 50s for farmers are racing ahead all the time, trying to keep up with these falling real prices because the supply keeps going up and up because we keep finding ways to make more milk, make more corn, make more soybeans, make more beef. Mm-hmm. And it's been the continual problem of agriculture in this country for like 100 years.
Paul, you said that this has been a problem for a long time, but why might Western Wisconsin be hit so hard versus the eastern part of the state or even Minnesota?
Yeah, I've been trying to get a sense of that, and it's difficult. Nobody seems to have a good idea. The best I've heard is, just like Owen mentioned, it's these smaller dairy farms. Some of them, there was a big dairy price collapse a while back, and some of them stopped being dairy farmers and decided just to do crops, and now they're having a hard time doing that maybe. That's all I can think, because that's the only way that really differentiates Wisconsin from these other states. You know, why isn't Illinois having this high numbers? Why isn't Iowa? It's our dairy farmers. And it's not like it's just them, but I think that's why our numbers are a little higher. I think we're losing some of these smaller dairy farms, but it's not just them. Like I said, it's a lot of the farms are facing the same pressure.
Owen, thanks for that call. Let's go now to Lyric in Blanchardville. Hi, Lyric.
Hi, thank you, Judith and Paul. I really enjoyed the two calls before, the gal talking about organic gardening and then the fellow that just talked about the small independent local farms. I live in Lafayette County, which is in southwest Wisconsin, and the geography of the land is that this is driftless. There's lots of steep hills and gullies. It's not flat like Illinois. It's not flat like Iowa. So the small independent farmer does really well if we had a better train transportation method to get the wonderful organic food from this area to Chicago and Minneapolis. It would really help the economy of the state and this local area. So I think geography has a lot to do with it. They can't just gut all the hedgerows, and they've got hills. They've got wonderful produce here, no way to get it to a big market.
Thanks so much for that call, Lyric. And so, you know, I know one of the things that we're going to hear a lot about in the State of the Union tonight is infrastructure investment. And it sounds like Lyric's pointing to the need for better infrastructure for getting the products to the consumers.
Yeah, that's a common problem that shows up. We had our Ag Outlook Forum last week, and we asked some of we had some, we'll call them farms/businesses that the Crave Brothers Cheese, for example, Farmstead Cheese, and they talk about the need for roads and infrastructure is an important, what can the public sector provide for them? And that's the case, is a lot of these productive areas are not near where the people live. And it's always a problem getting the food to where the people are. It's a huge problem in South America. The Argentina and Brazil have really come on growing corn and soybeans. They literally have to waste some of it because they can't get it out. A lot of our grain moves down the Mississippi River Valley, and that lock and dam system is getting older and older and older and falling behind. And so trains and semis, but then they have roads. They get worn out.
Sally from Reedsburg called and wondered if some of our farm exports have been affected with the Trump administration really throwing into question a lot of the existing multilateral trade agreements. How does that play into this?
What that has done is create a lot of uncertainty on what the price is going to do. We have our expectations. The markets, they trade the futures down in Chicago at the Mercantile Exchange or other exchanges. And the big uncertainty is all these crops, corn, soybeans, milk. Like half our soybeans roughly are exported in some way, shape, or form as crushed as soybean meal or oil. Corn, it's 10 to 12, 15%, somewhere similar to that with dairy or milk or cheeses. And that all that uncertainty about what is going to happen, because Mexico and Canada are big trade partners in China. And so it creates uncertainty about where that price is going to go. And so it increases the risk is what it really does. And then when we finally get these prices, who knows if there's a trade issue, something will move those prices up or down.
Is NAFTA, because it involves our closest neighbors, is that one of the most important trade agreements that kind of needs to be stabilized for the agricultural sector to feel confident?
It's one of them, obviously. Mm-hmm. China's our other big trade partner. And we haven't done anything with those yet, really, but it's the uncertainty that we're talking about doing it. And, I mean, already Mexico has started sourcing more of its grains for its poultry industry from Argentina. They're moving their export demands to switching their sourcing. And so that once you switch, it's kind of hard to switch back again. It's you kind of get those relationships, those contracts, those ways of moving things. So it has this uncertainty is starting to have some effects.
Earlier, Paul, you said that often when there's some kind of an economic recovery in the country as a whole, that the agricultural sector tends to lag a little behind. Are there indications, are there reasons for optimism that while it's been slower, that the agricultural sector is going to catch up with the recovery that we've seen?
I think the one thing I noticed in our Ag Outlook Forum last week was the demand for meats have been growing. And that's something we tend to buy when we have a little more income. And so as the economy recovers, and then those cattle, those hogs, the chickens and other, you know, turkeys and such, they all eat grain. It's the cheapest, easiest way to put gain on an animal. And so that's why there's a large chunk of those crops are used for feed. That's a promising point, is that demand for meat is increasing.
And Paul, I know that you also work with UW Extension. Are there resources out there for farmers who might be struggling and are trying to figure out creative ways to avoid getting into this bankruptcy situation?
We put together a couple things. This has been an ongoing problem for the last couple of years, and some of the state specialists put together considerations for managing grains in low price years, low margin years, and that came out last year, and it's still available. You can talk to your local county extension agent to get that. They've made videos, you can watch them, and I would call it very focused on the agronomic, how to make your crop management and stuff. And I think from my understanding, a lot of farmers have already squeezed as much out of their cost side as they can in terms of input management. But there's always room for a few more dollars maybe. The other one is there's been some various training sessions for those working with farmers, how to work with stressed out individuals and what to do.
Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That was Paul Mitchell. He's a professor of agriculture and applied economics and the director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute at UW-Madison. He joined us to talk about Western Wisconsin's spike in farm bankruptcies and what that could mean for the region.